The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. So you hear that your favorite band is coming to town. Man, you're so stoked and you're determined to see that concert. So on the day the tickets go on sale, you go online and bada boom, bada bing, they're already all sold out. So the only way that you're going to get to see that concert is to purchase those tickets from a reseller and frequently with a massive markup. What just happened? Is that fair? How is this legal? Who is looking out for the fans and the consumers? And what do you need to know to get a good ticket at a fair price and avoid being ripped off by a scammer? Call in with your questions, comments, and stories about how you get concert tickets and whether or not you feel a frustration or whether or not you feel taken advantage of. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. With your questions and comments, your stories, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined this hour with Gary Adler. He's executive director and legal counsel for the National Association of Ticket Brokers. Gary, welcome to The Source.
Thanks for having me.
Melissa Locker is with us. She's a writer for Fast Company. Melissa, you there?
I am.
Awesome. And Sean Burns, he's the editor of TicketNews.com. Sean, how big is the industry?
Oh, geez. I don't have a, estimate in front of me, but I know Pollstar just came out with its Q1 numbers based on what people are talking about ticketing. And I believe the Live Nation was number one with something like $358 million in sales. And that's just one promoter. Obviously, they're the giant compared to everyone else, but you're talking about 3 months in 1 year. So as far as a holistic number for the entire industry, I'm not sure, but we're talking billions.
Talking in the billions of dollars, and for a music industry that has seen, you know, the CD sales, album sales, they've dried up. Where a lot of artists make their money now is through performing. And Gary Adler, you're the National Association of Ticket Brokers. Tell us about your association.
Oh, sure. So the NATB, or National Association of Ticket Brokers, is a not-for-profit trade association comprised of professional ticket resellers. It was established in 1994 as a result of one of those horror stories of people going to the Rose Bowl only to be left watching it at the Holiday Inn on TV because the tickets they were promised weren't delivered. Back then, the ticket industry was very provincial, so it was brokers, if you wanted tickets to the Lakers, they were more likely than not the brokers in L.A., and then so the brokers throughout the country had the foresight to get together and realize that self-regulation of this industry was necessary. So the first order of business of the NATB, and I have been with the association since its inception in 1994, the first order was to create a strict code of ethics with a lot of consumer protection measures to make sure we keep our side of the street clean. It's interesting, as the secondary market has become legitimized through the internet and other efforts, the consumer protection measures that we've put in place long ago are as stringent, if not more so, than any regulation we've seen. So we have a strict code of ethics that the brokers who are members of our association agree to. Some of the key proponents are you can't use what's called automated devices or bots. You can't use deceptive websites so that you're clear when dealing with a consumer that you're on a resale site. Also, if you promise a ticket and don't deliver it, you have to not just refund the money, but to give a 200% guarantee. We also have strong ethical complaint process or procedures for consumers who deal with NATB members, and I've run that for 25 years, and I think it works extremely well. The mission of NATB is basically, to cut to the chase, twofold. First is to protect free and open secondary markets where consumers benefit. You know, you don't want restrictions on resale that drives it back into the back alleys. We want it done in the light of day with these consumer protection measures. And we also understand that in order to have a viable and open and competitive secondary market, it has to be free of fraud and deceit. So we've worked very hard to combat that and to, again, keep our side of the street clean.
So your organization is in, you're looking at the secondary sales of these tickets as you're providing the service for people.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a beautiful marketplace. You know, we get blamed a lot for, I think you started out by saying you go to, you know, to get tickets and boom, they're gone, and it gets blamed into the scalpers taking all the tickets, which is not accurate. Also, this concept that tickets are always, you know, at extraordinary markups or high prices is not accurate oftentimes. You know, last data I saw was over 40% of tickets are sold below the price you would pay at the box office. So, you know, I think people who deal with reputable ticket resale marketplaces or resellers, and, you know, I can explain, there's some misconceptions about how the market works.
Yeah.
If you deal, you know, do your homework and deal with reputable people, you will have an excellent experience. Our members are, this is their business. They wouldn't stay in business very long if they didn't deliver what they promised, and especially in the area of event ticketing, which brings out the passion that we see all the time. It's some reason. I've been doing this 25 years and haven't quite figured out why it is that event ticketing is such a passionate issue. But if people, professional resellers, didn't deliver great experience and what they promise, then they wouldn't be in business for as long as our members are, have been.
Melissa Locker, writer for Fast Company. We heard from Gary Adler talking about they don't use bots, people who are members of the National Association of Ticket Brokers, but bots are a big part of ticket selling. What are bots? What do they do?
Yeah, so I think, you know, using bots is completely, it's illegal in the United States, it's illegal in New York, but they are still wildly used, not necessarily by the ticket, you know, sellers themselves, but by people who are willing to put in the, like, time and resources to create this technology that will swoop onto ticket purchasing sites, and they basically swarm the site and purchase, you know, large swaths of tickets for instantly reselling them at a great markup on the secondary sites like StubHub. These are, you know, they basically overwhelm something like Ticketmaster, and while they are illegal, and it doesn't really matter for a lot of these people because it's just part of the cost of doing business, because they can get such a massive markup on sites like StubHub, and people are willing to pay it, that for them, like, if they do get hit with a fine, it's like not that big of a deal for them. And unfortunately for fans, it means that you, as this one individual person trying to get tickets to, say, an Adele concert, means that you simply will not have to be competing with, like, 300,000 bots coming out of somebody's basement in Ohio or whatever. And you don't really have a chance. And unfortunately for fans, it means you may not be getting a ticket for that concert that you really wanted to go to, unless you're willing to pay on the secondary market, which unfortunately is very expensive.
Yeah, but it is a marketplace. So we are seeing the free market, supply and demand, what the market will bear, what consumers are willing to pay in order to get that ticket. So you have to wonder if this is just a response to what people are willing to pay. So is it fair? I don't know, but it certainly is something. So give us a call. Tell us your stories about your ticket experiences. Do you think it's fair? Do you think you're taking advantage of fans? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. A lot of questions about this marketplace. We want to clear them up when we come back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about ticket sales and ticket scams, how to protect consumers and fans, and how to make sure you're getting a good deal. I want to go back to Gary Adler, Executive Director and Legal Counsel for the National Association of Ticket Brokers. Help me understand the market. And do you see this, I mean, again, about how you are providing a service? You are only in business because people are able, they want these tickets, and you're able to get the tickets, right?
Well, just to describe the marketplace just real quickly, there's there's ticket resellers or there's different kinds of ticket resellers. There's professional ticket resellers, members of our association. I have now come to, you know, to say that anyone with a credit card and a computer and is a reseller, because there's so much of resale going on by non-professional, some rogue resellers who do bad things. There's also marketplaces or exchanges, as we call them, like StubHub and Vivid and Ticket Network and SeatGeek. There are a bunch of places where people go on the internet to buy and sell tickets that are marketplaces that don't hold inventory or have tickets that people go to. So that's kind of the, and then you have to differentiate, I guess, at the basic level between the primary sale and the secondary sale. Primary sale is where usually it's Ticketmaster issues the ticket, and then it gets sold, and then it gets resold. The interesting thing that's happened over the 25 years, Dave, that I've been in this business is there's been a very big blurring between what's primary and secondary. Primary, like Ticketmaster, has its own resale sites. All the teams have resale sites. Artists have premium seat sites. There's a real blurring between the primary and secondary market. And, I think it's a tremendous service. I think it's a fantastic thing. One misconception that I've heard on this broadcast is that, you know, bots are the reason you can't get tickets. I vehemently disagree with that. Of course, it's a problem, but there are so few tickets that ever get made available to the public on an on-sale. That, to me, is the real reason for the inability of a fan to get a ticket on resale. And there's so many people vying for that ticket, those few tickets that get on sale. One of the things that NATB has always advocated for was transparency. Let's know how many tickets get made available to the public, in part because we get blamed for the lack of supply when we know that the lack of supply is, yeah, bots are an issue. They were a bigger issue before than they are now. But the real issue is holdbacks and the lack of tickets being actually made available to the fans. So,
okay, so help me understand that. What do you? Sure. Why aren't they releasing all the tickets? And if they're not releasing the tickets, I mean, those seats are eventually filled, right? They're going to sell those things. What are these?
Yeah, they go to people in house. They go to credit card companies. They go to the artists hold back tickets. The venue holds back tickets. There's, very hard to get behind the curtain of ticket distribution, but the times that we've been able to through investigative reporting, the amount of tickets that are actually made available to the public to go on their computer and get those tickets are a fraction of the house.
Well, how big of a fraction? How small of a fraction?
It depends on, we've seen for one of the first indications we saw were for back with when Hannah Montana, believe it or not, was a big act. There was, I think it was less than 30% of the tickets went on sale to the public. Times we've seen the data, which is really hard to get, it's usually a fraction of the house.
So of the tickets that don't go on the market, are those going immediately to resellers?
Not usually, no. I mean, they go to pre-sales. They go to premium seats for the artists. They go to holdbacks by the artists or the venue or Live Nation or the promoter or whoever.
Okay. Let me go to Sean Burns, editor of TicketNews.com. Can you kind of help me understand more about what are these holdbacks and why aren't more tickets that are in the arena getting available for fans to purchase?
Well, in a general sense, I mean, the holdbacks are anything that's set aside. So as Mr. Adler was mentioning, pre-sales, fan club stuff, those would be considered holdbacks. A lot of tickets going to the artists themselves to distribute among friends or family. Or in some instances, we've seen allegations of artists or promoters actually taking tickets and moving them directly through the resale marketplaces themselves, so they can effectively, you know, make a higher profit margin. You don't really see a lot of smoking guns, but it's certainly been implied about a number of different performers and artists.
Yes, let me ask you, Sean, this question. I have heard that organized crime is involved in that part of the process, that they have people in the ticket office who are able to set aside a certain percentage right up front before they even go on sale for a big markup and sell those. Have you ever heard of that? Is that true? Is that just a rumor?
To be honest, that's not one that I've heard, but given the lack of transparency, it's entirely plausible. Just given the fact that any time where you've seen any ticketing legislation that's been introduced in either New York or in Ontario not too long ago, you know, the conversation tends to start with two sides, where one side is working on, you know, do you put markup ceilings on stuff that makes people only allowed to sell a ticket for 10, 20, 30% above face value and put a cap on that? You know, whether or not, you know, bots are outlawed. Obviously, they're outlawed federally, but, you know, New York State has its own laws. And usually the other side of it is those legislation tactics look to put transparency on it, where the sellers and promoters need to actually disclose, well, if you've got an on sale that happens or a pre-sale that happens, well, how many tickets are actually available for John Q sitting at his computer at 10 a.m. when the tickets go on sale? And versus how many are not. And almost every single time, the promoters and the ticketing providers lobby the heck out of it and get those provisions dropped. So frankly, with no transparency on how many tickets are available, and you know, just to put a specific stat on kind of the percentages we were talking about before, former New York AG Eric Schneiderman did a big investigation a few years back and came out with a report, and they found that over 53% of all tickets to events in the state were held back. So that goes from, you know, New York is one of the biggest event markets in the country. So, you know, we're talking about Broadway, we're talking about, you know, stuff, Yankees games, we're talking all over the place. So I don't know specifically about organized crime being involved, but at the same time, I certainly can't rule it out, because nobody really knows how that sausage is made until you see the tickets are sold out immediately. And then everybody starts saying, well, it's got to be brokers, it's got to be bots, it's got to be 10 million things. But, you know, it could have only been 10,000 seats out of a 55,000 seat stadium that ever went on sale at that particular time.
Let me go to Melissa Locker, writer for Fast Company. Then we'll get to some calls. But so, Melissa Locker, do you see that there is a lot of money out there, and people who we do these resale and the holdbacks, and there's a lot of potential for being able to make a lot of money with this process?
Yeah, I think people are absolutely, you know, I mean, even fans, honestly, like if you can't make a show and you've spent $100 on a ticket, and it's a decent ticket, but for some reason you can't make the show, it's pretty tempting to even go onto the secondary website and not necessarily sell at face value when you see that all the other tickets are being sold at three or four times face value. Like, I know that when LCD Sound System was doing their most recent like run of shows at Madison Square Gardens, tickets that had sold for $100 were selling online for like $1,500. And while it may be bots who, and kind of resellers, you know, and scalpers kind of bracketing that up, it could also just be fans who have realized, like, oh, hey, you know what? I can make an extra $500 and see my favorite band later or at a different venue.
Okay.
And I think there's a lot of temptation for, you know, for both like kind of the business side of people who, you know, may be bad actors in the field, but also for fans who may just want to be able to make a few extra bucks.
Okay, and Ricardo is on, called in. The number is 210-614-8980. On the phones we go. And Ricardo, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, yes. Well, my previous experience in getting tickets are just becoming a member of the venue where they sell the tickets. For instance, I'm a member at the Tobin Center, and something for simply $150, a one-year membership, you get actually perks of buying the tickets before they go on sale. And I get all my friends together, and I purchase all their tickets. I don't upsell it, but I know they're fellow people that like like-minded music, and that's one of the ways I wind up getting my tickets ahead of time.
All right, Ricardo, thank you for that. So becoming a fan club member for a certain band, becoming a venue member type of a thing. So so Gary Adler, is that a way for people can find deals?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's and it's interesting because a lot of tickets that end up in the resale market and end up in the hands of professional resellers are people who do that. Season ticket holders, let's say, for a sports team, it's so expensive now, or subscribers to an event, to a venue, it's so expensive, and they can come up with a way to mitigate their risk or mitigate the cost by selling, you know, tickets to in the resale marketplace, whether on their own, or through, a lot of people don't want to go through that process. So it's a way that resellers get tickets. They buy them from a season ticket holder and hopefully sell for more. But as, again, I've pointed out, you know, the examples of these extraordinary prices are, you know, are not, I would say, random or rare.
They're anecdotal. They're
not always the case.
Right. So, and you cite that, what, 40% of tickets are sold under their initial value?
Yeah, I've seen data that says that, and recently a little bit higher even, that go below, if you take into account the fees that are charged on the initial sale, it's above 40%.
So let me go to Melissa Locker with the comment that Ricardo made about becoming a member, and I know that if you're a fan club member for some of these bands, this is a way that, of course, it's one way to say they can get more money out of you because it costs money to join these fan clubs, but also this is a way for them to make sure that their fans get to see them perform, right?
Yeah, and there's a couple things about that. First, I think, you know, fan club members are part of that initial holdback. So the research that I've done is that on average, around 46% of concert venues, those 46% of tickets are what's left over for kind of general public membership. But part of that other half that was held back in the first place, a lot of those are for fan clubs. And so if you are able to join a fan club, and it doesn't necessarily mean being like signing up, paying for a membership at a venue, it can also mean like following a fan on social media. It can mean following, you know, like signing up for their Facebook page or going on their website. And then also I do think that Ticketmaster's verified fan sales are a good way for them for true fans to be able to get tickets without paying a markup and to actually sort of beat the bots and beat other people.
Can you describe how that works?
Yeah, you basically sign up through Ticketmaster. And this is something that they unveiled a few years ago and sort of to fight back against these kind of massive, you know, these kind of companies who are like non-fans who are coming in and to make this into a business enterprise. So Ticketmaster unveiled this verified fan program where they were let fans sign up online, and then they kind of make sure, you know, if you're a member of if you follow the band on social media, or if you basically have to prove you're a true fan of the band, and then you can get early access to ticket sales, and it can make the whole ticket purchasing process a little less stressful, because while it's still a first come first serve process, you're not necessarily fighting 300,000 other people for 14 seats at Madison Square Garden.
How do you prove that you're a true fan? Do you have to like pass a trivia test or something?
Yeah, you have to have a tattoo, and you have to. You just go on Ticketmaster and just kind of answer a few questions. And I believe, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure Ticketmaster will actually kind of like look through social media or look through other things and kind of prove that you do actually follow the band. I believe Ticketmaster unveiled this after the Bruce Springsteen debacle, where everyone tried to get tickets to Bruce Springsteen and no one could do it. And so they unveiled this as a way of just kind of proving that, giving fans first access, which I know artists really want too, because artists don't want necessarily a whole bunch of, they want their fans up front and they want
right.
their favorite.
And band. Artists are also concerned that these secondary markets are making a lot of money off their tickets, and they're not getting a cut of that. We'll talk more about that when we come back from the break. What's the farthest you've had to go to score tickets for a high demand concert show or a game or performance? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. There are plenty of frustrations when it comes to buying concert tickets or game tickets, performances. There are service fees, waiting rooms, lightning fast pre-sales, and there are scalpers who upsell tickets, and there is also a legitimate secondary market. How will you navigate all of that to make sure that you are paying a fair and reasonable price to see the show that you really want to go to? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980 as we talk about ticket sales. And Tom is on the line. And Tom, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, David Martin Davies, thank you for everything you do. I was just curious, since we have the experts on the line, what is the exact process in purchasing Super Bowl tickets? I had a bad experience. I don't remember the year, unfortunately, but it was in Jacksonville or St. Augustine, and me and a business partner, we took a long trip. We had to stay, get lodging about 40 miles away from that area. Well, we were sold counterfeit tickets through a scalper and totally embarrassed, you know, because we went through all that pain and punishment, wasted, I don't know, $4,000 or $5,000 for the whole trip and never got to see it. I was just wondering if the experts could tell us, you know, what maybe the public would like to know, how to obtain Super Bowls, you know, what tickets and what is, you know, what is legal.
All right, Tom, thank you for that. Ticket fraud affects nearly 5 million event attendees each year, according to Ticketmaster North America. So let's go to Gary Alder first, because he's with the National Association of Ticket Brokers, and that's a way to, I guess, avoid ending up in that sort of a pickle, right, Gary?
Oh, absolutely, 100%. Great question, and you know, it's why the NATB was established. We've worked hard to make sure those stories don't happen, and they don't happen if you deal with NATB members. We're a national partner of the Better Business Bureau through years of doing the right thing as far as consumers go. If you go to the Better Business Bureau, you look at their ticketing page, one of their prime buying tips is to make sure you buy from an NATB member, and, in part because of these stories. So I guess, you know, we have also, you'll see ticket buying tips. You know, the ticket buying tips, and to answer the caller's question, will really come down to do your homework. Do your homework and know who you're buying the ticket from. If you buy it from a reputable ticket reseller, you will get that ticket. I have seen time and time again where people don't do that. They buy it on Craigslist, or they buy it, you know, from a rogue seller or someone that's not abiding by these code of ethics, and they end up in that story. It doesn't happen when you deal with an NATB member. And we have an added protection that if, for some reason, and I haven't seen it very often in 25 years, there's something that happens that ticket is not delivered as this story is, then you don't just get a refund. You will get a 200% discount. So there is this added reason why we want the public to know that if you deal with an NATB member. But again, it comes down to doing your homework. Make sure you know the seller. Ask questions. Talk to somebody on the phone.
Right.
If a deal is too good to be true, it usually is. So know your market.
Hey, you're not going to get a sweetheart deal with Super Bowl tickets. They're always going to be expensive. You just want to make sure you're paying for the real deal. Sean Burns, editor of TicketNews.com. The industry must be very interested in making sure that they crack down on bogus ticket sales, because that scares away a market, I imagine.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're in ticket sales, the last thing you want to see is stories about people, you know, particularly for high profile events like the Super Bowl and, you know, national championship college football games, you know, stuff like that, that show up at the gate and their tickets wound up being photoshopped or, you know, double sold or anything like that, because that scares away people from, you know, if you're somebody who is selling tickets in good faith and acting, you know, as a business person, whether you're a primary seller, venue, whatever, or a reseller or a marketplace, you know, you want to minimize that sort of stuff because it scares consumers. It makes people not trust that they are spending their money in a way that, you know, because ultimately everybody wants to, whatever amount of money they're spending on a ticket, even if it's, you know, a $20 local, you know, bar show for a band that you've heard about, or the Super Bowl and you're paying thousands of dollars, if you don't get in, that's a terrible experience. And if you're in the business, you don't like to see that at all. So, you know, getting everybody above board is kind of the goal. And obviously organizations like the NATB, that's what they're trying to do. And you know, any seller wants everybody to get in and enjoy the show and not worry about it.
So, Melissa Locker, there are people who go online on social media and say, oh, I was going to go to this concert, but, you know, my dog is sick and I can't go. And now they're going to try and sell it. But that's actually, you know, they have a very good story and they're able to present themselves very well as a true fan. And they're able to sell these things that way. So there are people need to be highly suspicious of these exchanges. What do they look for?
I would personally be highly suspicious of someone on social media trying to sell me anything. But I think that actually going to a second, if you are looking for a ticket and it's sold out at the venue, going to one of the like more established secondary marketplaces is your safest bet. Other than that, if you can meet the person, you know, if you really don't feel like paying to on the secondary market, if you can meet the person at the venue and have them escort you up to the ticket to make sure you actually get in, I feel like that would be the only other safe alternative. Otherwise, you're just gambling, and I personally am not a gambler.
Okay. All right, so let's go to another caller, Dan. Hi, Dan. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. I had a recent experience with Metallica tickets. They did an unveiling with the San Francisco Symphony, in which evidently demand was high enough they sold out pretty quickly. However, they immediately followed up with an email. I'm part of their fan club, so it goes back to previous comments about fan clubs. But basically they sent an email saying that Metallica is now releasing another show due to high demand. But this time they're only allowing the tickets to be sold exclusively to fan clubs. And according to the email, they said, and to do everything possible to keep the bots from getting any. So I'm curious if bots has an influence on the first concert that they released. And then also, are any, or, you know, high-profile bands taking a stance on any of this? And are you guys aware of any?
Right. So, Dan, thank you for that. So Metallica has always been customer-focused, fan-focused, and trying to figure out how to work around Ticketmasters. So, Sean Burns, how big is Ticketmaster, and can you actually sell tickets without going through Ticketmaster?
Do you mean buy tickets without going through Ticketmaster?
No, sell them. If you're Metallica, you know, are
oh,
you?
Oh, excuse me. Sorry. yes, you can. But it's very hard. I mean, you need to look no further than the Pearl Jam situation. And I think it was, what, like 93, 94, when they were kind of at their original zenith. They tried to mount a tour without using Ticketmaster because of fees and, you know, things like that. And they found that because of the way that the venue ticketing vendor partnership kind of is written in contracts, they couldn't work buildings unless they were using Ticketmaster. You know, there are obviously other venues, other vendors besides Ticketmaster and Live Nation, but, you know, they're at a size and scale right now that is, you know, a monopoly in all but name. I mean, I mentioned earlier the Q1 ticketing report, you know, Live Nation sold something like $358 million worth of tickets in Q1. The next closest competitor, number two, is AEG, which is another big player in venues and promotion, was $105 million. So the difference between one and two is, you know, a factor of three. And then, you know, everyone else is well under that. So, yes, you can certainly use places to sell tickets and things like that. But if you want to play at Madison Square Garden, if you want to play at, you know, any number of other stadiums, there's only one way to go because those contracts are exclusive. And if you want to play in that building, you're going to have to play selling your tickets through Ticketmaster.
So it indicates that there is something wrong with the first seller, the original seller market. And I don't know if it's broken or fractured or warped or what's going on there. But Gary Alder, I mean, the only reason why you're the National Association of Ticket Brokers, that you have an opportunity to serve people, is because the original system doesn't seem to be working very well.
Well, I have my own view that I think the whole ticketing system is broken. If you go to football games or baseball games or sporting events, I think a lot of empty seats. I believe it's in part because of the ticket issuer content providers I think, David, you said it better. You know, they don't want anyone making money off of their tickets, so they do all these efforts to stop resale, and in the end, they hurt their initial sale of tickets. So I do think it's a little bit broken, but you know, I think that's why you need a vibrant secondary market. Talking about artists and what they try to do. Most of the time I've seen the artists are reselling their own tickets. They don't want to be seen as selling front rows for $1,000, but they'll put them on a vehicle that Ticketmaster makes available or someone that they can do that a little bit, you know, not without transparency. But there are some artists, and I think they're few, that really have a good intention to try to keep the fans, the hands and the fans of the, in the hands of a fan at a low price. And unfortunately, that's just, it doesn't work, because since Shakespearean times, there's been resale of tickets. It's all driven by supply and demand. You're not going to stop people from wanting to go to that event. And the more you choke off supply by doing things like that, unfortunately, the higher the prices. So it's not constructive to have these measures in place, even when the artist is trying to do the right thing. But most times, in my experience, the artists are just as likely or more likely to be doing this because they put their tickets on sale, the best seats, and get a higher price for them.
I remember having to spend the night in front of the Hemisphere Arena trying to get concert tickets back in the day. It hasn't really changed a whole lot. It's just now that you're fighting against bots and it's all online. Was it any more fair now than it was back then? The number to call in as we talk about ticket sales and scams, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about ticket sales and scams, how to get the deal to go see the show that you really want to go to. Sean Burns, editor of TicketNews.com. We've heard that New York State has some tough rules and regulations, New York City also, but it varies from state to state. Texas has no laws. It's just some city ordinances, and then it's pretty, it's up for grabs. It's kind of the Wild West when it comes to tickets here in Texas. What does that mean for the consumer?
Well, mostly it just means do your homework. If you've got a show coming up that you're interested, I think it's been mentioned before, try to make sure you're following the venue and the performer on social media. Make sure that you are aware of when tickets are going on sale, whether or not there's a pre-sale that, you know, you have access to. Like, for example, if you've got an Amex or like Citibank, I know a lot of those credit cards, as we've mentioned those as part of holdbacks, it's like, well, you can be the beneficiary of holdbacks if you have the right kind of access. So, knowing what pre-sales there are and what options there are is certainly best. And then just understanding that a lot of times the stuff that's available in a pre-sale, there's going to be more the next day when they go on general sale. And then even after that, there may be more tickets that come out along the line. So being smart about giving yourself the best chance to buy tickets, you know, from the venue or what have you on the day of the sale. But then if you don't get those, know where to buy from a reputable seller in the secondary market, or just have some patience, because a lot of times, prices will move up or down even on the secondary market. If you have to go to the show and you buy them the day that they sell out, you might be paying more than if you wait 2-3 weeks or even can be patient enough to wait for a couple weeks before the show. So, just be smart about knowing the timelines and sort of what your options are, and just staying on top of it is unfortunately the only way to go.
Let me go to the calls, 210-614-8980. Andrew. Hi, Andrew. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, I appreciate the time to speak on this issue, and I didn't catch the beginning of your program, so I hope y'all haven't covered this, but an issue that I've run into where you're purchasing a ticket from a third-party reseller, it really has to do with disclosure and what happens if there's a cancellation or a rescheduling of the event. And if, for example, if you're going to go see an artist and they're sick, so they don't make the show, and they say that they're going to make it up to their fans, they're going to reschedule the show, even when a date is not announced,
through the resellers, you're not entitled to a refund, and they require you to hold the tickets until either an official cancellation is issued, or they say that you hold the tickets and they will be good when the new show is scheduled. The problem is that oftentimes these are months and months later. You might have, you might have somebody coming from out of town and buy tickets to a show. It's rescheduled, and you're stuck with those tickets, and there's not really much you can do about it. And in some cases, it can be, you know, up to a year or even more before the show is actually rescheduled. Now, I know that the New York Attorney General has addressed this some, and I find it very unfair because of the fact that when you're purchasing the ticket, the time and place is a material term. And when it suddenly is unilaterally changed, it seems to me on its face to be unfair to require the person that's purchased this ticket to hold it until the show is rescheduled.
Right. So you think you should get an immediate refund, Andrew?
Yeah. Well, it should be an option. You should be able to get a refund.
All right. So that brings a refund on the ticket, but also, like, if you're buying a resold ticket on something, then you, and there's a cancellation, you're able to negotiate what's going on moving forward, right, Gary Alder?
Well, yeah, a key component of the Code of Ethics since its inception was refund policies. Certainly if an event is canceled, you get a full refund. In the instance where an event is not canceled, we follow the rule is to follow the policy of the venue. You go to the venue and you say, hey, I can't make it. If they're willing to reissue it, then if that's their policy, then we would follow that policy. But I will say this, again, handling, if you deal with an NAB member, and I've handled the ethical complaint processes, and this has come up, you're dealing with someone who is in this business, and more often than not, they will work with you to find a resolution that may not be the perfect world. It may not be, you know, exactly what this caller would want, but they will work with you to try to accommodate you, resell, you know, help you out. That's the value of dealing with a legitimate ticket reseller.
Okay.
But yeah, we have strong refund policies. But our policy is if an event is postponed, that they follow the policy of the venue.
Okay. Here's Bess. Bess, thanks for calling into The Source. You're on the air. Hi, Bess. You there?
Hi. Oh, yes.
All right, go ahead.
Hi, I have a question. This has to do with the Hamilton tickets. On StubHub, those tickets were going on sale long before Broadway Across America said that they would be available. So I called Broadway Across America, and they said, well, those aren't valid, even though StubHub was selling them for hundreds of dollars for, you know, the nosebleed section. On the day that the tickets became available, according to Broadway Across America, the lines were just incredible at the box office, and they were selling those same tickets. So my question is, what happens to the StubHub persons who bought those tickets?
All right, Bess, thank you for that call. Sean Burns, can you answer that?
Well, I imagine most of the tickets that were available before they actually were issued by the venues were probably listed by people that are season ticket holders for that particular, like, for example, we had, we're based in Connecticut, so we had Hamilton just up here in Hartford not that long ago, and the Bushnell, which is our local theater here in Connecticut, they were doing, like, if you bought season tickets, you were guaranteed the ability to purchase tickets for Hamilton, so effectively a lot of people would sort of list on a resale marketplace knowing that they were going to have the tickets. They just didn't have them in hand because they hadn't been sent out by the venue yet. So I imagine that's probably, and I don't know obviously what venue you're speaking about specifically in your location, but I imagine that's probably a lot of what that is, where it is people with the right to purchase those tickets list them sort of preemptively because they know they're going to have them and their intention is to resell them for whatever reason it may be. So they just go ahead and list them. And then, you know, when people go to the box office and can't get them, they're ready to be bought on the secondary market right away.
So Gary Adler, National Association of Ticket Brokers, I think Hamilton's probably a unique thing, but are they selling tickets before the tickets are actually in existence?
Yeah, this is an issue that has arisen, and again, we have policies on it. There's different types of, again, if you rogue sellers who list things they don't have, but Sean's hit the nail on the head. There's a lot of times that a reseller will have a commitment, a contractual commitment to purchase those tickets, either through the venue or the sports team or a season ticket holder or somebody else. And that's why they would be listed ahead of time.
Okay, last call. Richard. Hey, Richard, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, it's one of the craziest things that I've gotten to get tickets was my first concert that I went to in the early 90s was The Cult, and 99.5 Kiss was having a scavenger hunt of all the items that from themes from their songs, like a picture of a fire woman, something used in a ceremony, a wildflower. And so I ran all over San Antonio, coming out of San Antonio College, out of class, and I got to win the tickets in Austin for the Frank Irwin Center. So that's some of the crazy stuff that I've done just to obtain my favorite band tickets, which was my first concert ever.
Did you have good seats?
I got front row seats with a bus to the concert and front row seats.
Wow, sounds like that's a great story, man. I hope you had a great time. So how do people get good deals? What is Melissa Locker, writer for Fast Company, you've written about this. I mean, you know, we're hearing about all these markups and all these mazes and all these bumps to avoid. What's something to do to get good tickets?
Well, I'm not convinced I've written about that specifically, but as a longtime music fan, I think that your best bet is to, you know, go ahead and if you can afford it, you know, signing up for these like credit cards that like Amex or City Card that give you pre-sale access. That is, unfortunately, it is a little expensive and it's not for everyone. But I also live next door to a music venue, and bless their heart, I see these children sleeping on the sidewalks of New York City overnight to get tickets first. And it works. They walk away from the box office absolutely happy. And that is also not for everyone, but it is free. So if you know, there's something to be said for signing up, you know, committing and getting there early and getting those tickets before anybody else. And if that means sleeping on the sidewalks of New York City overnight, and if that works for you, that is one way to absolutely guarantee a ticket.
Sean Burns, what are some tips you have for people who want to get good tickets?
As I mentioned before, I mean, just do your homework. Know where they're going to be available, what your access points are, if it's through a pre-sale, if it's showing up at the box office, if it's, you know, knowing a ticket broker that's got some kind of a deal with a promoter. Whatever it is, there's a lot of ways to score tickets. It's just kind of knowing what your options are and making sure you're there when they go on sale, and give yourself the maximum chance to make it happen.
Gary Adler, how do I know when I'm dealing with someone who's a member of the National Association of Ticket Brokers?
Thanks, David. There's a couple ways. You can go to our website, natb.org, and we have a listing of all of our members by region. We have some excellent members in Texas, some of the best in the country. Or you could go to the Better Business Bureau, go to their ticketing page, and there'll be a link for verifiedticketsource.com, and that will have a listing of NATB members as well.
All right, Gary Adler, he's with the National Association of Ticket Brokers. Melissa Locker writes for Fast Company. Sean Burns, editor of TicketNews.com. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is produced by Ken Johnson, Jan Ross Piedad, and David Martin Davies. Production assistance is provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.